Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Marwin Gonzalez is a name that's come up on the text page. Most popular non-all-star of the golden era of Astros baseball. I put Yuli on the table and I said, top this. Marwin's a pretty good one. And he had one of the biggest hits in the history of the franchise, too. Home run to tie it in game two of the World Series off of Kenley Jansen.
You know what I think? Because you had pointed out that the Royals announcers seemed kind of surprised at how beloved Yuli seemed to be, or was they saw that he was. I think the other part that people wouldn't realize outside of Houston was just how integral Yuli was in kind of becoming the beginning of this Cuban pipeline to Houston, and how valuable Cuban players have been. And he's like the godfather of current Cuban baseball. These kids, these young Cuban players all like grew up idolizing Yuli Gurriel. And Yuli's father was obviously also just he was royalty in Cuban baseball. So there's that whole dynamic that the Astros have benefited greatly from Cuban players. And I think a lot of those young players just looked at Yuli as a guy. Like, yeah, of course I'd go to the Astros. That's where Yuli Gurriel.
That's right. Cuban superstar Yuli Gurriel. So yeah, that's a great point, no doubt about it. It was really cool, man. All the guys up on the top step of the dugout cheering. They replayed it again this morning on the broadcast. It's on in our studio here, the broadcast of yesterday's game. It was just, man, I missed the guy. And he took the hat off and tipped the cap. I'm like, he's still got the haircut. It's still his trademark.
Okay, if you take Yuli's haircut and put it on Marwin, does Marwin become his beloved? I don't think so, also had a pretty... Marwin was scowling a lot of the time, which we liked. But it's not as endearing as Yuli, who just, like, with his wild hair and his, he wasn't goofy like George Springer or anything, but he had a demeanor about him that's just very likable.
There's a boyish mischievousness among Yuli. Like, Yuli seems like...
Yeah, even as an older player.
Right, like, Yuli seems like someone who wouldn't be afraid to light somebody's heel on fire with a cigarette lighter or something like that.
Well, and also, too, until you watch it night in and night out, you don't appreciate how awesome it is having a Hoover at first base like
totally,
he was.
Dude. Yeah.
I mean, I know there's times where the infielders with the Astros right now miss Yuli a lot because he made them right a lot. having a really capable glove at first base was nice.
Are we overrating the difficulty of the Texans' 2024 schedule? I think by any measurement, look, this is a harder schedule than last year. There's no doubt about that. I don't care what certain styles of ranking say about this schedule versus last year. Like, just the quarterbacks alone make me feel like the Texans are up against it. And just to, I guess, add some context to this, last year I would say the third best quarterback the Texans played behind Burrow and Lamar Jackson might have been Baker Mayfield, might have been Joe Flacco at the end of the year in the regular season, might have been Trevor Lawrence. Like, they did not play a lot of good quarterbacks last year. And this year, all four quarterbacks who finished ahead of C.J. Stroud for the Pro Bowl in the AFC are on the schedule. Mahomes, Lamar, Josh Allen, Tua. Jordan Love's on the schedule. Dak Prescott's on the schedule. Jared Goff's on the schedule. I don't know how you feel about a rookie Caleb Williams, but he's on there in week two. Like, there's a lot of, and I'm missing some too. I know I'm missing some. There are a lot of good quarterbacks. And yet, Mike Sando of The Athletic, we went through his tiers of quarterbacks last week. He went through an exercise, Seth, where he took the final scores of all 30 quarterbacks and he applied some. He didn't have rookies in there, so he just came up with some arbitrary numbers for the rookies. You know, Caleb's the best, then Jaden Williams and so forth. Basically added up the ratings of the 17 quarterbacks that each of the 32 teams face. And if you add up the ratings of the Texans' 17 starting quarterbacks that they face on paper right now, we know some of those are going to change because of injury and performance. The Texans have the 19th hardest schedule, and it's mostly because the quarterbacks in this division, at least according to GMs around the league, currently are not very good. Other than C.J. Stroud, Trevor Lawrence is mid, and then Anthony Richardson and Will Levis, there is not a lot of faith early in these guys right now.
I think that's the one where if you look at the top-end guys, obviously it catches, you know, Pat Mahomes, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Aaron Rodgers, Dak Prescott, Jared Goff, Jordan Love. Like, those are the top-tier quarterbacks that they face. Then, yeah, it's easy to get hung up on what a tough schedule it is. I guess my one concern is that when you start looking at the bottom tier quarterbacks they face, you know, Anthony Richardson is in the bottom tier. Will Levis is in the bottom tier. You're going to face those guys four times. Those two teams have, in the case of the Colts, they have the upside of Anthony Richardson and the fact that Richardson on any given Sunday can be a real nightmare for you. Richardson can be that type of quarterback that maybe it doesn't work out for him in his career. Maybe 3 years from now he actually hasn't been that good. But as a defensive coordinator, you go into that game thinking, man, this guy can ruin my whole day on two plays. You know, this guy can unleash a perfectly placed bomb downfield, or he's going to take off with his legs and it's just going to ruin my Sunday. In the case of the Titans, I don't buy into Will Levis at all. I'm kind of surprised that there's still people that are buying into him. I think he's a flaming disaster. And yet, I think they've gotten some good coaching around him, and there's a chance that it's a much better team this year. So I don't want to sleep on the Titans just because of previous issues that they had or even their quarterback, because I do think this is a scheme that, kind of like in a Gary Kubiak, Kyle Shanahan fashion, can get the most out of a mediocre quarterback.
Yeah, I've long thought throughout this offseason the Titans are going to be a bottom five or six team, but I will acknowledge that they made some moves that should improve his receiving. I mean, they signed Calvin Ridley, and Tyler Boyd. Like, those two are an upgrade over what they were trotting out there alongside DeAndre Hopkins last year. So that's if healthy, it's an older trio, but it's a good trio of receivers. It's veteran guys, and with Ridley, there's a level of explosiveness to that group. I like the running backs, even though they lost Derrick Henry. Like, I think, you know, Tony Pollard, when used in the right role, split with Ty J. Spears, the kid out of Tulane. Like, that's a backfield that has a little bit of explosiveness to it. You know, they've picked up veterans. I mean, Legarius Sneed is a high level cornerback, but they went and got some. You know, they got Quandre Diggs and they got Jamal Adams. Jamal Adams isn't the guy that Seattle traded two first round picks for anymore, but it is some veteran help on the back end. So they've got some guys. I'm more concerned about this version of the Titans than I was last year's version of the Tennessee Titans.
If you look at the top tier guys, the Mahomes, the Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Aaron Rodgers, I think that where it could easily go one way or the other is with Josh Allen and Aaron Rodgers. Mm-hmm. Just in that Aaron Rodgers, we don't know exactly what he's going to look like, if he's going to be able to stay healthy. Whether he had an Achilles tendon tear or not, just given his injury history and his age, that you'd have questions about just how good he's going to be this year. And then with Josh Allen, I mean, Josh Allen's in a situation where, kind of like it was with Pat Mahomes a few years ago when he lost Tyreek Hill, he's got a lot to prove this year. You have got to see Josh Allen on a team that doesn't have the same assets or weaponry that Pat Mahomes had at the time, just because he still had Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
Pat Mahomes still had Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
He had lost somebody that was, you know, Tyreek Hill was a bigger loss than Stephon Diggs' loss in terms of the caliber of player at this stage of Stephon Diggs' career. But I think the Bills Bills had a lot of losses in free agency. They're really under the gun this year. I think to a greater degree than most people are talking about it. They've got a lot of challenges both offensively and defensively.
The Chiefs were, when they traded Tyreek Hill and they made that decision to go, okay, we can't pay Patrick Mahomes, we can't pay Travis Kelce and pay Tyreek Hill and pay guys on defense, Chris Jones, guys like that. They're built on a much more solid foundation to execute that strategy than the Bills are right now. To your point, the Bills traded away Stephon Diggs for a draft pick. And by the way, a draft pick that they don't even get to use until next year. It was a 2025 second round pick. And they're getting rid of guys. They're not retaining foundational guys. Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde, now Matt Milano's hurt for most of the season with this torn biceps. They're just, Andy Reid is your head coach in Kansas City. Sean McDermott is your coach in Buffalo. Independent of how you feel about Mahomes versus Allen, they're clearly, at least on offense, executing a similar strategy. I'll tell you who puts a lot of pressure on, aside from Josh Allen and Joe Brady, their offensive coordinator, Dalton Kincaid, the second-year tight end.
Right.
Because there's a lot, as you pointed out, Seth, the reason they could trade Tyreek Hill was because they could get average wide receivers and put them out there. Okay, the Bills have done that. They've gotten guys that might not even be average. But they had Travis Kelce in Kansas City, a Hall of Fame tight end. And Dalton Kincaid is a big part of what they're trying to do this year. That's a lot of pressure on a second-year guy.
Oh, and by the way, you and I haven't talked about this because you were out, and I don't think they even had, the official clarification didn't come out until maybe on late Friday or Saturday. Rashee Rice is not going to miss any games at the beginning of the season. They're going to let the legal process play out. So depending on how long that goes, I don't know, maybe the legal process will play out at an advantageous time.
That's
right before
Christmas. Oh, right at Christmas time. Merry Christmas,
I don't
Rashee.
Know.
You're going to miss the Texans game. That would be beautiful. That's really interesting. I had not seen that, so I appreciate the update. It's really interesting because the NFL, since when does the NFL care about the legal process? They're their own.
You know what? It's come up in a few things. When it doesn't involve domestic violence, especially, I think that's been more of the policy over the past few years.
But when it involves Rashee Rice and his friends possibly killing people on a freeway. No, that's just interesting to me. So that'll be one weapon Mahomes has early on in the season, at least. Does this make you any less? I don't know how nervous you were about the schedule to begin with the Texans. Does this resonate with you at all? That maybe they play a lot of top level quarterbacks, but the other quarterbacks they play are guys where there's a lot of questions about them.
No, I think if anything, it shows that maybe it's not as simple as, oh, look at the quarterbacks. Yes, it's the most important position, but it's the offenses in total. Because if you look at this listing of, the Texans, the quarterbacks they face aren't actually all that great. One of the mid-tier guys is Tua Tagovailoa. So, again, this goes back to the any given Sunday part. I don't care where Tua is going to rank historically amongst quarterbacks. It's a really scary offense.
Yes, yes.
Is Tua the driver or the recipient of that? When it comes to playing them on that specific day, I don't care. Yeah. It's a really good offense, no matter how good or how responsible Tua is for it.
I think this is my biggest concern with the Texans schedule is, I'm concerned about the quarterbacks, but I think there is a similar concern, if not a maybe even a greater concern in these other cities about the Texans quarterback. You know, it's not like you're going into this schedule and Brock Osweiler's the quarterback. You're like, well, okay, Osweiler's got it. We feel pretty good about the team we built, like they did in 2016. But Osweiler's our quarterback, so we can't stand toe to toe with Lamar Jackson and Aaron Rodgers and Josh Allen and Mahomes and on and on and on. I think these other cities are going through this exercise if they are, and they're going, okay, well, we got to play Stroud, we got to play Lamar Jackson. Stroud gets mentioned in those tiers. My biggest thing in looking at how Sando lays this out visually, Seth, in this article, the Texans only play one really bad team this year, and it's the New England Patriots.
Yeah.
Like, even Minnesota, I know Darnold stinks, but they've got a lot of talent on that roster. I know Will Levis stinks, but as we just talked about, they've upgraded the talent around him tremendously. I think Indianapolis, I've said all along, is the second best team in this division, Richardson or no Richardson. So there are five or six or seven garbage teams in the NFL. I think the Texans play one, maybe two of them all year.
Three of the games played against lower tier quarterbacks are very much in the unknown category. Yeah. Caleb Williams, and then twice with Anthony Richardson.
Yeah.
It's that the upside of those guys and the potential of those guys to be scary or wreck your day is very, very high. We just don't know yet. So I think the uncertainty about that and the potential for Caleb Williams, who the Bears did a really good job of surrounding with lots of veteran wide receiving help, and then Anthony Richardson, again, go back to the Any Given Sunday. That's the perception. I don't think it's an unwarranted concern or fear if you're looking at the names on the schedule.
We talked about that article earlier in The Athletic on the show today where they took the 10 teams that, according to the computer model that Austin Mock of The Athletic uses, the 10 teams with the best chance to win a Super Bowl, why they will and why they won't. The Texans were not among those 10 teams. I can't imagine they weren't any further down, that they were further down than 11th or 12th. But it was a computer model that simulated the season a bunch of times. And the top 10 teams included teams like the Jets and the Bills that I think the Texans are better than. If the Texans found their way onto that article, Seth, and it was the why they will and why they won't win a Super Bowl, what do you think? If the Texans don't win a Super Bowl, what do you think the biggest reason will be?
The biggest reason and the most likely reason right now would be just that they don't develop a solid rushing attack,
yeah.
Especially when it comes to playoffs. There's times where you just flat out have to run the ball, and if you can't run the ball when you have to run the ball versus really good defenses, then this offense isn't going to be as potent as the passing game suggests it could be.
Yeah.
So right now, that's my biggest concern. And by the way, since it is good to point out, like, a lot of the computer models do have the Texans as like around the 14th or 15th favored to win the Super
yeah.
Bowl.
Yeah.
And like that, sometimes, you know, the lines are tweaked by human perception and what gamblers feel. And the Texans have had a glow up all off season long. The computers can be a much more objective look at just exactly, okay, what is unproven about this team and what have you. There's still a lot of projection going on with them. I drink the Kool-Aid. A lot of this
too.
Is a vote really for D'Amico Ryans and C.J. Stroud and them being what I think they are, and then also improving over what they were last year.
Yeah.
I think that's the one, as much as people have praised C.J. Stroud, and for the most part people kind of, like most analysts are discounting a sophomore slump or something, but I think that they also at the same time haven't really accounted for the fact that C.J. Stroud is going to likely improve as a quarterback.
Yeah.
With or without Stephon Diggs,
yep.
I think that he's going to be a better quarterback for the duration of the season than he was looking at the entirety of last season.
This is not a reason why the Texans will win a Super Bowl, but this is, in my mind, the reason why they are so high up on the odds board for winning a Super Bowl and why people are so bullish on over 9.5 wins. C.J. Stroud is one of the most popular players in the NFL right now.
Yeah,
point blank.
Yeah.
I mean, like the average Joe better looks at quarterback first and foremost when they're doing these things. I saw an article this weekend that said talking about trading cards, you know, and like C.J. Stroud. This is a super nerdy thing, but like of all the graded trading cards out there among NFL players, C.J. Stroud is light years ahead of everybody else right now. Like,
yeah.
He's got like 145,000 graded trading cards out there, which is more, if you were to put a fantasy team together of the highest graded ones at each position, like two running backs, three receivers, a tight end, and a defense and a kicker, C.J. has more than the rest of those players combined. Like, he's that popular out there right now. He's
wow.
He's an incredibly popular young player out there right now, you know? So it's fun to have, man. It's really fun to have. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Monday, Labor Day. Appreciate you if you're listening. Appreciate you getting up and hanging out with us here on a Monday morning. We're with you until 10 a.m. I know that when I was out last week that Seth and B. Scott, I think, hit this article, the anonymous agents weighing in on various NFL things.
I love Exec Anon.
Exec Anon and Agent Anon are great things. There are two things from this article I needed to get in on here on this thing. One, an agent who might need their license revoked, and two, a GM who is probably seething over this survey that was done with anonymous agents. That is next.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Sports Radio 610 presents Pain and Pendergast.
I was bummed out not to be here on Thursday and Friday last week when the anonymous agent article annually in The Athletic came out where agents dish on the best and worst franchises, Patrick Mahomes' value, what Dak's new deal is going to look like. And more than anything else, they're dishing on GMs and organizations that they respect and trust and are good talent evaluators, all those things. I think I saw in the rundown that you and Brandon kind of went through this article, Seth, by Ben Standing of The Athletic.
We did, and it was one of the most notable things immediately when I hit Command F to search for the Texans was that, you know, the Texans really is, I think in last year's edition, there were at least a couple agents that described the Texans as a dumpster fire, et cetera, et cetera. Yep. So the Texans didn't really show up in here a bunch other than a few times, a few votes for Nick Caserio as the smartest and best GM in the league, which is cool to see. It's a stark turnaround in the eyes of agents.
They pulled 31 agents. There is clearly at least one out there that is all in on Nick Caserio because he was called, in a quote, underrated in two different categories, which tells me it's the same agent both times. Like
They got one vote for best run franchise.
Might
have been Mulligetta. I mean, Mulligetta, by agent standards, has done pretty well. Like, it's been a symbiotic relationship ever since the Deshaun. You look at what he was able to get for his client, but then also get for the Texans in that trade.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, and if that's the case, then I'm kind of glad that Derek Stingley Jr. switched over to David Mulligetta. And now that And he and C.J. Stroud are both going to be up for extensions.
He's already once before negotiated an extension for a promising young quarterback in Deshaun Watson with the Texans.
The Texans not showing up on the question, which is the most unstable franchise? That was not the case the last few years. Zero votes there. Zero. Panthers, 9 of the 31 votes. In the Panthers and Raiders, man. Half the votes went to the Panthers and the Raiders.
The Panthers fan base is just, they've got the new Dan Snyder. They've got an owner who just has an incredibly huge ego and thinks he's smarter than everybody else with zero patience.
Yep. Okay, so the two things that I just wanted to delve into in this article quickly. The question, what average annual value would three-time Super Bowl MVP Patrick Mahomes get if he were a free agent on the open market, which is a fascinating question. It'll never happen because of the franchise tag and because Mahomes is in a perfect marriage right now in Kansas City, at least for as long as Andy Reid is there. You know, who knows? These guys, it feels like all of them change teams at the end of their careers now. So maybe someday Mahomes is playing somewhere else in his twilight years. Who knows? But it's a fascinating question, Seth, because we are, as of right now, there's a good chance we're going to see this play out, not with Mahomes, but at least with Dak Prescott, who was runner-up for the MVP last year. And the tippy top of the market right now is $55 million a year. Joe Burrow, Trevor Lawrence, and I'm missing one other. Oh, Jordan Love. They're all making $55 million a year, average annual value. I contend that if Dak hits free agency, he will break through the glass ceiling of $60 million a year. Mahomes, the votes are really interesting because they're pretty split. Of the 31 responses, the biggest number is 13 for $70 million a year. There are six people that think he would make more than $100 million a year on the open market.
Oh, my gosh.
$100 million a year, which I think is extreme, not because he doesn't deserve it, because he's the best player on the planet and he actually wins Super Bowls. But because I think there's a breaking point for how much you give one guy and then still have the ability to put a team around him. I would probably settle in at that $70 million like the other 13 agents do there. Six say over $100 million, five say $75 million, 13 say $70 million, six say $60 million. And then there is one agent out there that says that Patrick Mahomes would command less than $60 million if he hit full-on capitalism free agency.
Right.
Which...
this is after, remember, it's been how many? It's been 3 years now since Deshaun got $45 million a year on a cap that has since increased.
It was March of 2022, he got $46 million a year.
Okay, and the cap has increased substantially since then.
Yes.
And there are not nearly... That wasn't an open market. That was a trade market where the Browns had to give up a king's ransom of picks, and there were only five teams bidding on him as opposed to potentially 20-plus teams on him. Yeah, I would be I'm shocked that somebody would say that, but I'm not so shocked when I'm pretty sure that is also the guy who said this about the Dak Prescott situation. I got to think this is the same agent. Yeah, when they're talking about what the Cowboys should do about Dak Prescott, this is an agent saying this. Hold the line. Once you start paying guys that crazy money, they effectively own part of the team. You can get a $5 million quarterback and win 8 games. Maybe Jerry's getting hip to that reality.
What reality?
I don't care what you think about whether or not the Cowboys should or shouldn't pay Dak Prescott. Like, this is standing up at the union meeting and saying, you know, guys, I think sometimes we don't really appreciate how much money it costs to buy a Mercedes for our managers. You know, those guys want to drive nice cars, and we're sitting here, we're trying to take more. Think of the management.
That's that agent. Yeah, you're right. He needs his license revoked.
Once you start paying, there's a guy like he's arguing on behalf of the owners here, which like there's merit to what he's saying, but not you don't say it as an agent.
He almost feels like he's campaigning to be a GM. You know, sometimes Andrew Brandt did that. Remember the guy? He was an agent for a while, and then he went and worked in the Green Bay front office for a number of years. That's who that guy sounds like. He sounds like an agent. Rob Pelinka. He was an agent for NBA players, and he's a GM for the Lakers now.
That almost sounds like if I were the writer and I were compiling these quotes, I might leave that quote out just because I don't want people to think that I'm making quotes up. Yeah. Because like
it's this that is outlandish. That,
it's that dumb of a quote by an active NFL agent for him to say that. Yeah.
As far as the agent who said that Mahomes would get less than $60 million if he hit the open market, which I think if Mahomes were motivated to make the most he can make, he would clearly make more than $60 million. Like he would sail past. I think he'd make 70 at least if he were on the open market for sure. The only viable answer that I can allow this agent to have that take on of him making less than $60 million on the open market would be if he feels like Mahomes is wired in such a way, which he is, it would appear, to where he doesn't want to max out on salary because he wants to build a team around him.
Right.
You know, it's not what could he get, it's what will he get on the open market, you know, and Mahomes may very well take that same tact, which is like, look, I'm making $60 million a year and I get all these commercials and I'm cool, you know.
I think I mean the biggest thing, and this is where if you want to look at history and when it has and hasn't worked out with quarterbacks as franchise quarterbacks, the two quarterbacks who, so if you want to feel good about CJ Stroud moving forward, you got to hope that either like with Kansas City or New England, you know, Tom Brady played at a discount his entire career pretty much. I think Pat Mahomes is not agitated publicly, and it doesn't seem privately for a new contract. And I bet he signs, like, he's on a very team-friendly deal right now. I'm guessing eventually with an extension it'll be very team-friendly. Those are two quarterbacks who very much trusted their head coaches.
Yes.
Just that their best chance of winning a championship was with that head coach, and they knew that what's good for the goose is good for the gander in a lot of ways, and they were able to do that. So I'm pretty optimistic that a couple of years from now, CJ's going to feel that way about DeMeco.
I hope so,
and
man.
That trust. There's got to be a trust level there for a guy to actively and willingly say, yeah, like for the good of the team and building, I trust that you guys are going to take this money that I'm basically giving you and that you're going to generally make wise decisions with it.
Yep. I think that's the track we're on right now.
So Caserio obviously is also in that
big part
in
of that
group. And right now it's easy to feel that way. I just hope that we still feel that way 2 years from now.
Yeah. I think I told you last week, like when I did that event with CJ back in March, Mulligetta was there, and this was like a week after free agency, so it was pre-Diggs trade, but post Hunter and Mixon signings and all the other signings. And Mulligetta seemed pretty happy with what the Texans were doing around his guy, you know, around CJ. So, and that was before they traded for Stephon Diggs. So the other observation from this article, so the one observation was, I think there's an agent out there who way undervalues Patrick Mahomes possibly. The other one, and I'm guessing, I'm not even being facetious, I'm guessing Ryan Poles, the GM of the Bears, who never met a microphone nor an interview that he didn't like.
Yeah.
I'm guessing he is seething at this poll of the 31 agents here because his PR campaign, which I contend includes Hard Knocks and every interview he's done since the trade, which has been a great trade, by the way, but since the Bryce Young trade, been a phenomenal trade for the Bears. This is not me saying Ryan Poles is a trash GM. I think he's been a good GM for the Bears. I also think he's a pub hound, and he got zero votes among the 31 agents for any of the GM superlatives. Best talent evaluator, zero votes. Which GM or front office do you trust the most? Zero votes. Best all-around GM, zero votes for Ryan. I contend that Ryan Poles is seething over this right now.
You think so?
Yes.
I think, not that I want to stand up and defend a guy who is born in my high school rival's hometown.
Oh, that's right.
Canandaigua. But I contend that for him, the PR campaign, it's more important not that he be regarded outside of Chicago as a really bright GM, but if you're going to go into any kind of a tank mode for any duration of time, and, you know, credit to them, they won 7 games last year, but the year before that, they were in tank mode. The PR side of it really, really matters.
Yeah.
The opposite end of the spectrum is Sam Hinkie and how he handled it with the 76ers. The process was going along, and it was kind of working out the way that you could hope that it would work out, but he was horrible at massaging the process of the ownership, the fan base, everything. And I don't know if it's possible in the city of Philadelphia to massage anything.
Right.
But I think that I think the most important thing for a GM is that you're getting buy-in from the fan base.
Yeah.
And that way ownership doesn't get overly stressed about it. I think he's done a pretty masterful job of that.
He has
done
that.
Ultimately, at the end of the day right now, he's the guy who passed up a chance to draft C.J. Stroud. That's the way it could end up. The story could end up being written down the line is like, wow, that Caleb Williams was a bust and they could have had C.J. Stroud.
I feel like we're among the few people that are even pointing that out. Like the Caleb Williams thing, and that Caleb looked very capable in the preseason has thrown everybody off the scent of that. Like there, I was seeing that somebody, I forget who, but somebody from up in Chicago, might have been Danny Parkins, who's now on FS1. He was a host on our sister station until recently, and now he's on TV. Said that Caleb Williams is already the best quarterback in the history of the Chicago Bears.
Than anything else.
Yeah, they've had bad quarterbacks, but it's.
I guess Cutler. Funny. I mean, Cutler, if he'd been drafted by the Bears, you look at Cutler's natural ability and his arm talent and everything else like that. I could have easily imagine people saying that about Jay Cutler as a young quarterback.
Yeah.
It's just you got to deliver on it at some point.
Yep, we'll see. The Caleb and Texans are going to get a look at it in week two, man, under a nearly fully repaired roof. Hey, guys, text message. For all of us working today, thanks for, quote, laboring for us. All the fill-in guys are great, but there's nothing like a pain in Pendergrass morning. I'll take Pendergrass. That's okay. I've been called worse. Appreciate the kind text. Yeah, Seth pointed out, like, it's week one, man. Let's go.
Yeah. I always thought Labor Day meant that you're supposed to labor on extra hard on that day.
Yeah.
That's where they're, yeah. Oh, we have a day to honor you, our comrades. We celebrate the laborer. So, labor now.
By making you work. All right. Pain and penalty.
So this is your little Zen moment. You get to really just be in the moment.
That's
enjoy
right.
your job. Yeah.
I can't believe I'm about to say this as somebody who went to a school whose arch rival is the University of Southern California. But after last night, thank you, USC. And you will hear why coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Pain and Pendergast.
All right, Pain and Pendergast with you. I don't do this often. You know, I'm a proud Notre Dame alum. I don't wear that on my sleeve on the show a lot. I'm pretty good about that. But I have to point that out because I'm thanking the University of Southern California. That game was a tough watch last night for me because I'm not really. It was LSU and USC in Vegas, and I am predisposed to hate USC and hate Brian Kelly. Which, in retrospect, I think if Marcus Freeman turns out to be a good head coach, it may have been the best thing that ever happened to Notre Dame, him going and taking that bag from LSU. I'm sure LSU fans are feeling this morning like they'd like to send Brian Kelly back to Notre Dame because for the third straight year, Seth, he has lost a nationally televised primetime season opener.
Yeah.
3 years at LSU, he's 0-3. The first two losses were to Florida State. At least one of them in fairly cataclysmic fashion, like on a blocked field goal or something like that. And then last night, loses to USC in what was a very evenly played game. You know, the game, you know, it was within one score.
For most of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Till the fourth quarter.
Till the fourth quarter, and USC started getting it going. But USC wins this game 27-20. Miller Moss is USC's new quarterback. He's replacing Caleb Williams. He's one of both the quarterbacks who were with these teams, Neusmeyer for LSU and Moss for USC. They pointed this out several times on the broadcast. They are guys who stuck it out, who went to those schools and didn't transfer. And actually both ended up sitting behind Heisman Trophy winners in Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels. And now here they are, and they both have their opportunity. Moss made the most of his opportunity last night. He threw for nearly 400 yards last night. USC wins the game 27-20. LSU had their chances in the second half. They were not able to cash in. And Brian Kelly, third-year LSU head coach, he is angry. The thud you're going to hear in this is him pounding his fist ferociously on the desk.
We're sitting here again. We're sitting here again talking about the same things. About not finishing when you have an opponent in a position to put them away. But what we're doing on the sideline is feeling like the game's over. And I'm so angry about it that I got to do something about it. I'm not doing a good enough job as a coach. And I got to coach him better because it's unacceptable for us not to have found a way to win this football game. It's ridiculous.
It's hard to really explain how phony that fist pound looked.
You have to watch.
It looked how scripted it looked.
I'm so glad you thought the same thing I did. I thought this. I'm like, this 30 seconds is the most fugazi anger I've ever seen.
He had read in a manual about how to express anger.
Dude. Then immediately opened up his bank app and just checked to make sure that the check cleared this week.
Yeah. I feel like ChatGPT told him what to do. In that one, hey ChatGPT, how do I express anger in a press conference? Pound your fist.
Yeah right. Okay. Right.
Also say that you're angry.
Yes.
But with no
yes,
actual
yes.
emotion behind it either.
That hit me more than the fist, where he goes, and I'm just so angry. I'm like, who that's actually angry says I'm so angry? You know, like,
well, you know, a lot of times in sports with athletes and coaches, there's a performative aspect to it where somebody taught me this when I was a young athlete, and I was grateful for it, was that, you know, when you're throwing a tantrum or you're really upset, you're doing that for others.
Show.
You want everybody to know that you care and that you understand and everything. So, like, are you A, is it actually accomplishing anything? B, and B, is it the best form of leadership?
Yeah.
And I feel like Brian Kelly, somebody needs to take that youngster under his wing and maybe tell him that.
I don't know,
like,
man.
Hey, like, dude, like, what are you doing? You're just the... Plus, nobody's buying it, okay? Like, nobody's buying your anger.
I don't know, man. I just spent a few days in Louisiana. There's a lot of people there that probably bought that, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
They
like,
bought his fake accent,
well,
too.
I'm here with my family.
Play that again, Ben. I gotta hear that again.
I'm here with my family.
It's so true. Not the first time he's faked it as LSU head coach.
And I'm so angry about it.
Yeah. At least he said that in his normal accent.
He's got his elocution is too good. Like, and I am so angry about it.
And I'm so angry about it.
I've got a mind to write that manager a letter.
Strongly worded.
I am going to put this on Facebook so fast it'll make your head spin,
dude.
Buster.
Dude, that's...
He definitely says Buster when he's angry.
Buster, and I have a buddy who points out with coaches, like, what's the likelihood that within the last month they've asked to see the manager at some sort of eating establishment.
Yeah.
And Brian Kelly, see, Tom Herman was always the gold standard for that. Like, my buddy Rick, he'd be like, Herman is definitely a guy who asks to see the manager at a restaurant, for sure. Like, frequently.
Herman do it does he do it calm, cool, and collected? Or I always appreciate the people that ask to see the manager, but they do it, like, in an understated way where they're just, they actually want to explain the problem and maybe have an expectation that the manager will fix it.
Yeah, I think Herman's got a little Kelly in him. Can we play Kelly one more time? I enjoy hearing an agitated Brian Kelly. Yeah.
And I'm so angry about it.
Okay, yeah. I wanted to hear him bang the fist too, Ben. Just the beginning there.
We're sitting here again.
Okay, that's good. Banging the fist. The water bottle starts shaking there next to him and whatnot. That was good stuff.
Boy, it's tough to lose to a team from the Big Ten?
Yeah, I know. I know this conference stuff, dude. Yes. That was the other thing this weekend. I'm like, oh.
I felt so disoriented,
man. Way to rep the Pac-12. I know. I felt like I was on, the worst edible of all time. I'm like.
College football has turned into, it's always hard to keep track of all the different kids. But now, and then with 12 playoff teams especially.
Yeah.
There's just a whole lot of new realities that you have to adjust to in college football. And I'm finding myself, as I was veering into grumpy old mandom about it, I actually, after the first big weekend, I found it refreshing. I don't know if it was in a good way, a bad way, or whatever. I just kind of enjoyed the Wild West element to all of this and the fact that there's going to be 12 teams in the playoffs, and we don't know exactly how it's going to look or how it's going to play out. I guarantee you that Georgia's going to actually make the playoffs this year based on week one results.
Yes,
it's really interesting.
It is. I thought I thought ESPN did a good job this weekend, too, of... Look, if you're a college football fan already, it was probably very repetitive, but I think they realized like they've got a lot of new people in the store, ESPN and ABC and Fox, and they were over-explaining the format of the new playoff. And like they on every broadcast, it felt like on pregame shows and on the broadcast, they do the thing where they had these zippy graphics with the what the bracket would look like, and you got the four conference champions that automatically get the top four seeds, and then the next... And then the group of five champion gets thrown in with the other teams, and the seven at-large teams are going to get picked by the committee, and this is what it would look like if the ranking, you know. I thought they were probably over-communicating it, but they've got so much invested in it that I think just to get people to feel like, hey, it's not all that complicated, you know, this is
it's
all it is.
It's not all that complicated except for, like, the little codicil that it's, like, the highest ranked who aren't conference champions and all. But yeah, it's relatively basic.
Yeah, it's pretty basic, so... So, that was Brian Kelly. One of the other great moments this weekend from a college coach, current college coach, was Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State. They played South Dakota State in their opener, and they beat them pretty good. That South Dakota State is a two-time defending FCS champ. That was thought to be like a possible upset special this weekend. Oklahoma State ended up winning, I think, pretty handily. Mike Gundy was asked after the game, I guess the question was about whether the OC and the quarterback, you know, they've got constant communication going on in the helmet and the headset. Mike Gundy was asked if those two let him listen in on it.
Yeah.
And they don't, apparently.
Well, you're right, right. And that's the other interesting thing about it. I wish actually they had spent more time on the QB communication now that quarterbacks have headsets. It's unlike the NFL, there's only one voice potentially in the quarterback's ear, usually the offensive coordinator. Where in college... There's apparently a cacophony of voices, potentially.
They have
multiple different coaches. I think only one at a time, I hope. But I could see that being a disaster for some staffs, especially if there's ego battles or disagreement going on.
Well, apparently Gundy...
arguing for, like lobbying for mic time to talk to the quarterback.
Yeah, for sure. Well, the head coach doesn't like the play calling, and he's in there like, no, we're going to run the ball here. Yeah, like... The poor 18-year-old kid.
Honestly, I do like that just from a purely quality of the game standpoint, without having to worry about placards or iPhone stealing or anything like that. It's been long enough now. We've had the technology for some time, that being the radio, to go ahead and have a quarterback. Have a speaker.
Here was Gundy when he was asked, hey, do they let you, do the OC and the quarterback, do they let you listen in and communicate at all?
I can't. They won't let me hear it. If anybody's a good IT guy, we can get the guy from Michigan down here and let him hook me up. Even though he didn't do it. What was that song? What was that song? You should know. Yeah, the song, it was kind of a partial rap in the shower. It called me, I didn't do it. It wasn't me.
Shaggy.
What was it?
Yeah. It wasn't me.
Yeah, that's right. It wasn't me. I know that was you. It wasn't me.
I hope he just didn't pick a black guy.
God, I need to know who he pointed at.
Hey, it would have been. If it was some random black guy that he didn't know, that definitely would have been in the news this morning. I'm guessing it was. I'm guessing to defend Mike Gundy from my joke, it was somebody that was of that age.
It sounded like the first voice to respond might have been a female voice. Uh-huh. So he might have even pointed out a young lady. The song is from the year 2000, and it's called It Wasn't Me by Shaggy. It's got a nice reggae vibe to it.
Time-tested advice. Yeah, Shaggy was Jamaican.
Yeah.
Or at least Jamaican-American. I can't remember. But the time-tested advice, deny.
Yes.
as much as it might seem like it doesn't make any sense, deny. Yes. That's what my father told me growing up. I don't have the stomach to abide by it, but if you're one of those psychopaths who can pull it off, gaslight it would be the new version of it.
Yes. Yeah. By all means. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. How would Lou Holtz say it? I'm just so angry. These suckers out there, their ass is a horse's ass. And so I'm going to tell you that right now, sucker. I'm so angry with my football team.
How would he sing the Shaggy song?
Saw me in the shower. It wasn't me. Saw me on the counter. It wasn't me. Saw me with this other. Oh, it wasn't me. Wasn't me.
I like that.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you.
Lou Holtz. We got to use AI to do some Lou Holtz.
Oh, yeah, you can. We'll do some Lou Holtz transcripts, and then I'll read them in Lou Holtz's voice. Thank you, Derwin. Appreciate the request. All right, Payne and Pendergast. Let's circle back to the Astros. This is getting fun. 6-game lead on the Mariners, and now I'm telling you what the goal is right now. We're going to take a look at that because the goal ain't looking in the rear view. The goal is looking in the windshield. That is next.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to LinkedIn.com/results to claim your credit. That's LinkedIn.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.